so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Bacheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're going to be doing our third episode of the monthly Mimer series. This time, I'm excited to welcome Etzel Kaplan. We're going to be doing a Mimer from Kuntra Somayan. It is a Sefer of the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Chabad Rebbe. And yeah, I'm excited to delve into it. But Etzel, maybe introduce yourself a little bit first.
Hi, my name is Etzel Kaplan. And Hadassah and I know each other from Mayanot. We had a lot of great learning experiences together, and I'm really excited to be here and discussing this with her. It's very exciting. So a lot of times when I learn something, I find that it will remind me about some kind of experience I had in my life or during my journey when I was becoming more observant. And I would say that holds true for this particular mimer. Although I didn't grow up observant, I spent a lot of time thinking about spiritual concepts. And it wasn't until college that I became involved in an outreach organization. And what drew me to it was that I felt like I met people who had a lot of the same questions that I did. So not necessarily that there were answers, but that people were asking questions. And I gradually became more observant, and a couple of years into living that lifestyle, I started to feel like I had hit a plateau. I was keeping Shabbos, keeping kosher, davening, doing everything you would expect a frum person to do. And everyone around me was telling me, you made it. This is great. You should feel content with where you are because now you're doing everything that you're meant to be doing. But for me, this was scary because I realized that my questions had all been answered. It was like, now what? Up until that point, I had felt like my entire being was defined by my search. And now that was gone. So in this process of finding myself, it was like I suddenly didn't know who I was because I didn't have these questions. And I felt like I didn't have anything left to search for. And this was really difficult for me after having made all of these life changes to feel like, okay, now I don't even know who I am anymore. And by Hashgacha Pratis, a friend brought me to a Chabad house on my college campus. It was the first time I'd ever been to Chabad. And we went to a Forbringen. And I remember feeling like I had been transported into a different world. Like I had discovered an entirely new layer of the Torah, and I didn't understand it, and it made me want to understand. And it was like this yearning had been reignited by Hasidus. And so of course I continued to go back and learn more and more, and the more Hasidus I learned, interestingly, the less content I felt. The more I felt the tension between where I was and where I could be, and what our reality is right now and what it could be when Mashiach comes. And I found that the less content I felt, the more myself I felt. I felt like I was in the right place. And it's quite counterintuitive, but I have a feeling that this is somewhat of a universal experience. The reason that this mimer really spoke to me is because it does actually refer to this existential yearning as something that everyone experiences. Anyone who has a neshama will experience this type of thirst, whether or not they're aware of it. And it's something that can't be quenched by anything in this world. It's completely related to the desire to be reunited with godliness. And it's very validating, I think, to talk about existential longing and thirst as just a normal human experience. It's just a reality of being here in a physical world, in a physical body, and having our godly soul obscured by all of these material influences. I think a lot of people will feel kind of like a non-specific yearning, and they can't really identify what the object of it is, and then it will lead them in all kinds of directions, and they're always searching for something, and they don't really know what they're searching for. And what Chassidus does is it's able to identify where that's coming from and then direct you toward the object of that yearning, which is Hashem. And so I feel like this is something that any person who is a soul in a body can really appreciate. And when I read this, I felt like it was speaking to me directly, like, oh, this yearning, this thirst, this is something I can relate to, and I want to explore this more.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, you know, I actually remember we learned this Mimer together when we were in Mayanote, and like, in contrast, I had like been studying Chassidus my whole life, right? And like, I remember when we would learn this together, like it kind of like challenged my understanding of everything I knew, because you had this like very inquisitive way of looking at things, and you'd be like I'd be like, oh, Malchus and Ratzon and Chesedes, like I would throw around all these terms, and you're like, well, what does that actually mean? Like, what do you mean when you say inner will and outer will? Like, what is that? And I'd like sit there and be like, wait, like, do I actually know what I'm saying? I actually don't. And like, I think it was like a really, for me, it was a very like transformative experience to like be studying such a like basic text of Chassidus and like challenge each concept that I thought I understood and be like, wait, do I actually understand that? So I remember that being a really like incredible experience personally. So yeah, so just a general introduction to what Kuntres HaMayan is before we get into the specific chapter we're going to be learning. Kuntres HaMayan was a sefer that the Rebbe Rashab wrote, and the goal was sort of to take, I guess, spiritual Hasidic ideas and address very like relevant practical challenges, internal challenges that a person faces, right? Like sort of address a lot of the internal struggles that we deal with, right? And there's a lot of discussion about this idea of shtus, right? Sort of this like foolishness that the human being encounters throughout their life. And there's different types of foolishness, right? There's like the all kinds of like sort of lies that our own animalistic instincts tell us in order to distract us from what our real goal is. So we're going to be learning specifically the sefer is divided into mamarim, right? Like different discourses. I think there's 28 in total. And then each of those are divided into chapters. So we're going to be looking specifically at the sixth mimer in the sefer, focusing in the second chapter. And yeah, we're going to delve into the idea that you were just talking about this, you know, existential thirst that all of our souls have existing in this world. Okay, let's go for it.
Can I actually jump back to something you said earlier about your experience learning at Mayanote? So I remember learning with you, and something that stood out to me was the fact that you had been raised observant your entire life, and you're sitting there in front of this book as though you're learning these ideas for the first time. Like, you had so much knowledge about them, but it was like it was like they were new to you. And I just remember being very, very struck by that. Like me having just started to learn. It was, I think for me, it was very like reassuring to me that after so many years of learning these concepts, they could still feel new to you. It was like, I knew I was in the right place.
Right. Right. Which is going to fit into exactly what we were talking about here, right? That like,
right.
The goal is not to like, you know, learn and learn until you know everything, right? Like the goal is to like, mm-hmm. be in that like inquisitive, you know, state of searching, right? Cool.
Okay. So I am going to read some of the Mimer inside. To give everyone a feel for what it is discussing. All right, so the first concept that I'm going to read about is the idea of being thirsty. and what this means, how it's experienced within the godly soul. However, at present, the sphera of Malchus is thirsty. Because of its descent and investment into Bia, it is in a state of thirst, longing to rise from its lowly state to be united with its source. The same is true of souls. To inhabit the body and animal soul, the soul descends from the plane it was before entering the body. There it was in a state of the ultimate spirituality, utterly removed from any self-awareness and corporeality whatsoever, incapable of becoming corrupted to be the antithesis of godliness. However, upon entering the body, even while performing its aforementioned service of humbling the gross matter and nullifying existence, nonetheless, it is related to existence and the physical. After all, it is actually clothed in an animal soul. The descent brings about an intense thirst to rise, to merge with above. Nor did this thirst exist before. It comes only as a result of the descent into the mundane. The intensity of the surge and the thirst is directly caused by the descent into the physical body and animal soul. This applies to Malchus as well. Its own descent into Bia causes its thirst to ascend even higher. So this is saying that it's specifically when the godly soul is in an environment where it can't express itself that its yearning becomes even stronger. And that yearning didn't exist when the godly soul was just completely in a state of being nullified by godliness. It's only when it's faced with opposition. And I think in general, anytime you're in a situation where you feel like you can't express your needs or you're being silenced, then you become even more energized to try to express yourself. And I think it can even take on like a very violent and passionate nature sometimes. So this can be a very intense feeling, I think. And many people probably aren't aware of it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, I mean, just, you know, like obviously the soul in its original source, right? It's like that's where it's able to express itself fully, right? It can experience godliness in a very real way. And then when it comes into a body and into like a very limited physical world, it almost like becomes like trapped and like it doesn't, I mean, often, not always completely, but like often it doesn't really have a voice. And like you can imagine being in a state where like you're in a room with other people and like, you know, your friends and family are there or whatever, and you have like a lot to say and a lot to share. And like, imagine just not being able to talk and express yourself at all. Like, that's just like a very painful experience. And like, there's sort of this like yearning to be able to just express yourself the way you want to. Right. Like you said, like that experience becomes stronger. Like the more, like, I guess, limited you are, the more trapped you are, the more silenced you are, the more there is this yearning to just express more.
Okay, so the next section I'm going to read talks about the completely opposite experience of the animal soul. The animal soul is able to be satisfied by material things in this world. And so because it's easily satisfied and the needs can be met immediately, I think we tend to focus on meeting the needs of the animal soul more. Because there's a simpler equation. You know, I'm hungry, I go get food. I'm tired, I sleep. I need to get some energy out, I go move my body. It's very easily understood, and we can easily get our needs met. And so I'm going to read what the mimer has to say about this.
Before you read it, I was just thinking like an important point, just based on what we said before, in contrast with the godly soul, is that for the godly soul, it's when it's in the body, it's impossible for it to really be satisfied, right? Like that yearning that it has can't ever really be satiated because they're in the limited physical body that doesn't allow for that real experience of godliness in the most unlimited form, right? So it's not just that, like, you know, if the person doesn't allow their godly soul to express itself, then they're gonna, you know, then it's going to feel silenced. Like, just by definition, the fact that it's in a physical body already gives it this deep yearning that that can never really be satiated as long as it's the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. I think that's a really important point because it helps us recognize that this is just the nature of our reality. Just the fact that we have a physical body means that our soul is going to struggle to express itself, and it doesn't reflect any personal shortcoming in any person. You know, it's not that I have failed somehow. It's just the reality. This is just how we're wired. This is part of Hashem's plan, and we're all here together with this same struggle. Okay, going to read inside now. Sated refers to man's desire to satisfy his physical lusts while he has no desire or thirst for godliness. His longing, his passion are primarily for physical delights, and these quench his thirst. In addition, these desires can more readily be satisfied because they are at hand. While the longing of the godly soul is for godliness, and it will not be content, God forbid, with bodily pleasure. Therefore, it is in a state of thirst in its descent and remains in that state constantly, unable to quench its thirst. This is because the presence of God is not truly revealed at present. At best, we can attain knowledge of his existence and not comprehension of his nature. Only in the future will the prophecy be fulfilled. Your teacher will no more be hidden, for his true nature will be revealed then. But now this nature is not revealed, so the soul is in a constant state of thirst.
Right. Yeah, I think also another thing I was thinking it's important to point out is that even though the experience of the soul is this thirst, because it was important to point out that the Mimer says like God's presence isn't felt in a real way in this world, so that's why it's always going to have this thirst. But there is also a purpose for why it's here, right? Like there's previously in the Mimer it had said that like really the soul reaches greater heights by being here, even though its mm-hmm. experience is this constant thirst, right? Mm-hmm. So like there's a purpose to going through that experience of being, you know, distant and yearning, right? Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important to acknowledge that we do need to properly meet the needs of the animal soul in order for the godly soul to fulfill its mission here, since the godly soul is dependent on the body and this physical world to express itself and to complete its mission. And so we should not be denying ourselves our physical needs or our psychological needs. We should, of course, be taking good care of ourselves. That goes without saying. But I wanted to make sure that that point wasn't overlooked. You know, we certainly shouldn't be denying ourselves of what we need, because our godly soul and our animal soul are meant to work together. They're dependent on each other in a way, and they're both necessary to fulfill our mission here.
Right. I think also like just to like add on to that, I feel like the way that I was describing the difference between the animal soul and the godly soul, right? That the animal soul inherently has the ability to be satisfied in a very concrete way. Like it desires this thing and you can give it something very concrete that will satisfy that need. While the godly soul has this endless thirst, it kind of gives you an idea of like sort of like the difference in terms of like the way you approach those, like your animal soul and godly soul, the needs of both of them, right? Like your animal soul is going to, like, there's going to be needs and like you have to address whatever's necessary in order to like for it to function well, right? As to assist the godly soul in what it needs to do. But it's limited, right? There's like a limit to what it needs in order to feel satisfied. While with the godly soul, there's always endless like amounts of, like it never ends what you can give it to be satisfied. So like, it's almost like you can kind of see like the focus on your animal soul is always gonna be more limited, right? It's always gonna be like just what it needs. It's always a means to an end, right? I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like it's always gonna be a means to an end to like fulfill whatever role it has in assisting the godly soul. While the godly soul, because it's an end in itself, right? Its needs are never ending, right? There's always gonna be like, there's always more that could be invested in the needs of the godly soul. So also like that idea kind of reminds me of this idea, you know, like the curse of the snake, right, is that it will eat the dust of the earth, right? So I remember reading that, you know, like that seems like a reward, right? Because like there's dust everywhere, right? Like you'll never have to ask for anything. Like you always have what you need. Why is that a curse? And the answer is that like Hashem is almost saying like, I'm just going to give you sustenance that's just super available to you, right? Like you can always get it so that you won't have to call out to me to ask for what you need, right? Like I don't want to hear your prayer, right? That's kind of like what the curse is. And like the blessing for that is that us as human beings, like we need to ask in order to get what we need to like satisfy our needs, right? So I don't know, I kind of like see a parallel with that and this idea that like the animal soul, like it has, like there's something very concrete that it needs and there's something that concrete that can satisfy that need. Well, with the godly soul, it's almost like there's this constant yearning and connect. That sort of is what opens this connection to Hashem, the fact that there's always a yearning and always a need that's never fully being satisfied.
I think in our society, a feeling of dissatisfaction or yearning is often framed as a negative thing. Like it's something that needs to be resolved. You need to figure out what's missing in your life and you need to acquire that thing and then you will be fulfilled. I think we see that a lot in different milestones that we reach in our lives. I think we have this illusion that when we reach the next step, then we will be fulfilled. And that feeling of dissatisfaction will be quelled. So that could be finishing a certain level of schooling, getting married, having a child, and any big life milestones like that. I certainly was always fed that message that reaching these milestones complete you as a person. And I think in a way it does. You know, you do reach a certain level of completeness when you achieve certain things. But what I found is that each time a milestone is reached, it's really just closing one phase and then starting a new one. And that new phase just opens up a completely new wave of yearning for different things or on a different level. Suddenly there are new challenges and new struggles and you're moving towards something else. There's really never an end. And I don't think that achieving that feeling of satisfaction is meant to be the goal. I think that we can recognize that within ourselves there is this endless depth because we have an neshama and we're connected to something infinite. And what we're truly working toward isn't something that can be achieved just by reaching a certain milestone in our life. What we're working toward is a complete transformation of our reality, which is Mashiach. And so we have these smaller steps toward that. But I really believe that with each step, it just brings us to like a new place of exploration. And it's a new journey. There's never really an end. And I think that if we stop focusing so much on achieving like that feeling of closure and satisfaction, that I think in sort of a counterintuitive way, we would be more content, like just accepting the fact that, okay, we're working towards something infinite. And it's not only okay to continue to have that dissatisfaction, but it's a good thing. That's what's going to propel us toward our ultimate goal.
Right. Like I loved how you said like at the very beginning that like on your journey, like you thought that like Judaism was going to give you all the answers, right? That was going to like give you this like sense of like satisfaction. I got all the answers to my questions. And then like when you like discovered that like, oh no, there's more questions here. That was like exciting, right? It's like you want there to be more questions. Like that's a good thing. It's almost like it flips your whole reality on its head. That like, no, like what our goal is not to get all the answers. Our goal is to discover the questions, you know, like that's what we're aiming for here, you know? Also it just reminds me of, I feel like in general in like relationships, like a real relationship is not one where like, okay, like I get to know someone, I get to know more about them. And then now I know them. Right. And then like, that's now I've reached the ultimate because I know everything about you. Right. And like, that's just like, then you just reach like this this plateau, like you said, right? And like, I feel like really the goal should be like to always maintain this sense of like curiosity and wonder. Like there should always be more questions, right? Like there's always more to discover. And like, once you lose that sense of like wonder and curiosity and like this desire to discover, like that's when like the relationship dies, you know? Mm-hmm. And like that's sort of like the difference between like the animal soul and the godly soul is it's almost like the opposite of what we would think, right? Like we would like, you would think, oh, the godly soul has all the answers. But truly, it's the opposite. It's like the animal soul has all the answers, but the godly soul has all the questions. And like, that's what makes the relationship alive, is that there's always this quest, right? There's always more questions. There's always like more desire and yearning for something beyond that I don't already have, you know? Yeah, I think that's like really powerful point. Yeah, and I remember you were saying, when we talked about this earlier, about the, you know, how in society today in general, we're getting fed a lot of answers, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially in the past few years with how social media has evolved, we have access to instant information from every place without even needing to ask a question. It used to be, if you have a question, okay, I can go on Google, I can type in my question and I can find answers. And that was a big deal, you know, that we could type a question, find instant answers. Now you don't even need a question. You can go on any social media platform and just be bombarded with information you didn't even know you needed and answers to questions you never even asked. And it's all just right in front of you, which can be very educational, I guess, from one perspective, but it also doesn't require that you really look inside yourself and introspect and identify your questions and formulate questions. I think that in and of itself is really important, to be able to just look within and figure out what your question is and how to communicate your question and figure out where to direct your question to get to either get an answer or at least to provoke a discussion that will be meaningful and helpful. I think that being able to ask questions is an art, and it's a skill, and it brings us to a deeper place of understanding than if we're just given answers without having to go through that process of questioning.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I feel like we've been so wired to like just expect, yeah, to just like want to know what, feel this conclusiveness of the answer instead of like looking for that quest, right? Like maybe that's not what the goal is. Maybe that goal isn't to just always get answers. Maybe the goal is to find our questions.
Well, I, you know, anytime I learn about the struggle that exists when we're in Gullis, I then try to imagine what, like how that will be resolved once Mashiach comes. And so thinking about this idea, when Mashiach comes and godliness is completely expressed through the physical world, will that sense of yearning exist in the same way, I guess, is what I'm trying to envision. Like in Gullis, this yearning is what is propelling us forward. But when Mashiach comes, will that exist? Will we even require that? You know, maybe we'll have everything laid out in front of us and we'll be completely conscious of Hashem, but we'll still yearn for more, I guess, because Hashem is endless. And because of that, maybe we'll still experience that yearning. I don't know, just some thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? Like, what does this yearning look like when like Hashem's presence is felt in the world? Right. I mean, like, do we lose out, like when you finally satisfy that yearning, do you lose out on like, well, I think in a way you do, meaning like we have this idea that when Mashiach comes, we're going to long for the days of Gullis, right? Like it almost seems like there is like an advantage. I mean, you see that even like in a relationship, right? Like distance when you're apart from someone, there's this yearning. And then like being with them again, like to satisfy that yearning. And like, yeah, there is something like more like beautiful in a way about that state of longing.
Yeah, it's like you miss missing them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, like I feel like, yeah, in a way, like when the Mashiach comes, we will be satisfying that longing. And like, yeah, there's going to be something, there is something really valuable about the days of Golos, or on a more like micro scale, right? There's something more valuable when it's being in a body versus when it goes back to Hashem, right? Because that state of yearning that it's in is in a sense more valuable, right? Like that's like, yeah. I think there is truth to that, but there's something more greater about that state of yearning. But like it's almost like a paradox. So on the one hand, it's like there's something like deeper, more beautiful about that state of yearning. But like by definition, the yearning is yearning to be out of the state, right? Like that's what yearning means. Mm-hmm. So like interesting paradox.
Mm. Yeah, that is interesting.
Cool. Well, this has been really fun to revisit this.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for coming on. And yeah, I hope whoever's listening will take this as inspiration to explore these ideas more.
Thanks everyone for listening.